Welcome to the Nip Tuck Coach Radio, your cosmetic surgery connection. Join cosmetic surgery Nip Tuck Coach, beauty expert, and author of Safety First, A Consumer Guide to Cosmetic Surgery, Michelle Garber, your host of the Nip Tuck Radio Show. Michelle's goal is to empower listeners and help them make safe cosmetic surgery procedure choices. This fun and lively show explores the world of beauty and cosmetic surgery and features expert guests on a variety of topics. No hype. Your host, Michelle Garber, is here today to help you navigate the confusing world of cosmetic surgery.
Hi, everyone. This is Michelle Garber, your host, and we're broadcasting live this afternoon from San Francisco. Happy Friday. If you don't know me, I'm founder of Nip Tuck Coach, an independent cosmetic procedure consultancy, and I'm a patient advocate. My goal is to help you navigate the confusing world of cosmetic procedures by keeping you safe and well-informed so that not only do you get a great result, but you get the best result. To create more consumer awareness, I've written a comprehensive guide called Safety First, the 10 Golden Rules for Safe Cosmetic Surgery, and you can download that for free at my website, which is www.niptuckcoach.com. Fat zapping or fat busting is very popular, and we've talked before about Cool Sculpting on my show, and today we're going to talk about another exciting new safe, non-surgical, pain-free technology for fat reduction called Vanquished. And with me today is Santa Barbara Plastic Surgery, Dr. Neil Handel. Hello, Dr. Handel. How are you?
Hi. I'm happy to speak with you this afternoon.
Well, thank you for joining me. How's the weather in Santa Barbara? Are you in L.A. today?
No, I'm in Santa Barbara, and it's just another beautiful day.
I know. We live in paradise, don't we? I know. It can't get too boring. You know, when I look online, I look at the pictures of the Northeast in Boston.
Yeah.
My stepdaughter lives in Boston and all that snow, and I'm from the East Coast originally. I do not miss it. And every day I look out at the water where I live, and it's just, oh, my God, I can't believe that I'm living here because it's just so beautiful.
Yes, it's beautiful there as well.
Yes. Dr. Handel is internationally renowned and board certified by the American Board of Plastic Surgery. He's been in practice for 37 years. His main areas of expertise include breast augmentation, revision surgery, cosmetic facial and body surgery. He's often interviewed for newspaper magazine articles. He's been featured in a 10-part documentary on plastic surgery for the Learning Channel and Discovery Health. Dr. Handel has received numerous awards from Super Doctor to one of the Southern California's best doctors and has been chosen year after year as one of the best doctors in America. Dr. Handel has a private practice in Santa Barbara and a satellite office in Beverly Hills. So let's talk a little bit about Vanquish. Vanquish is a radio frequency device that heats up and kills the fat. How does this work, and how is this compared to the other fat-reducing devices on the market?
Well, Vanquish is a relatively new technology, but it's been around for several years. And as you mentioned, it uses radio frequency waves just like your microwave does. So basically, Vanquish heats up the tissues. In fact, it heats the skin to about 105 degrees, but it heats up the underlying fat to about 110 to 15 degrees. So the skin is not damaged, but the underlying fat cells are killed. And over time, slowly go reabsorption, and there's a reduction in bulk. Vanquish is primarily used in the abdomen and flank area, and the results have been good, but I think all of these modalities, whether it's Vanquish or Cool Sculpt or any of the non-invasive fat reduction techniques, they really have to be measured against liposuction. Liposuction, as you know, has been around for about 35 years now, and is an extremely effective way to reduce localized areas of fat. Vanquish is really for patients who either aren't candidates for liposuction or absolutely refuse to have liposuction and want to try something less invasive.
Well, now, because there's so much in the aesthetic, the medical aesthetic arena, that's non-surgical.
Correct.
And there are many people out there that are just really afraid of going under the knife and having surgery, and including liposuction. And this gives, I think, consumers an alternative. But what's important is patient selection, and to note that if you're really overweight, this is not going to solve the problem, and that it's a lifestyle. It's not just reducing your fat or busting or zapping your fat, but it's part of a whole lifestyle. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely correct. In fact, if a patient is significantly overweight, if they're obese or overweight, they're really not candidates for even liposuction, because liposuction and Vanquish are both developed to reduce localized areas of excessive fatty tissue. They're not really weight loss techniques, as you know. And Vanquish is a very appealing technology because it's very easy for patients to go through the treatments. There's no downtime. There's no discomfort whatsoever, which is really wonderful. And we do see results. But I always like to present Vanquish to patients in a way that I make sure that they don't have greater expectations than what we can deliver. And I would say that
our patients. That's always key.
It is. And overall, our patients have been satisfied. In the surveys that appear online on sites like Real Self, the satisfaction rate with Vanquish is 87%, which is much higher than with other non-surgical modalities. So certainly patients are satisfied, and it's a great procedure because patients can go right back to work or whatever after their treatments, and it doesn't interfere with their lives at all. There's just no downtime. And no risk, really, no significant risks. Very safe technology.
So, in particular for Vanquish, who is the best candidate?
Let me tell you a little bit about
Vanquish.
Talk to
us a little bit about the technology.
Yeah.
And I understand that the device does not touch the body.
That's correct. I mean, basically, as we mentioned earlier on, Vanquish uses radio frequency waves, just like your microwave, to heat up the tissue. So the applicator is a curved device that lays over the abdomen and the flanks or hips. It's very close to the skin, but it doesn't actually touch the body. The treatments take approximately an hour, and there's a sensation of some warmth, but no discomfort. Patients need to be well hydrated during the treatment because microwaves actually heat up the water in tissues, so we want to make sure there's plenty of water in the subcutaneous fat. So we ask patients to drink between 6 and 8 glasses of water the day before, the day of, and the day following treatment. We've also incorporated what's called Z-wave massage therapy into our treatments. So patients after the one-hour Vanquish treatment receive about 5 to 10 minutes of vigorous physical massage to try to break up the fatty tissues, and this seems to improve the results. We recommend that patients have a minimum of 4 treatments to achieve the best result. The treatments are spaced approximately 1 week apart. And then it's important for patients to understand that the results are not immediately apparent. It takes some time for your body to break down the fat cells and to excrete the lipids, and we don't really look at the final results until about 2 months after the final treatment. So that's the skinny on fat reduction with Vanquish.
Now, I read online that some patients develop hot spots. I know you said that it heats up the tissue up to 105 degrees. And so what is a hot spot, and what does that mean?
Well, I think what you might be referring to is some patients develop areas of fat necrosis, where they get lumps or tenderness in the area that's treated. And that's actually a good sign, because what that reflects is that the fat cells are actually dying and undergoing what we call necrosis or tissue death. So we do see a certain percentage of patients, maybe half the patients, that get these areas of lumps or discomfort, but they do go away over a period of several weeks to several months after the treatment. And as I mentioned, they're actually a favorable sign.
During the treatment, they shouldn't feel any discomfort.
Well, not discomfort, but they do feel warmth. Now, we use a fan to cool the area, and we have our technician in attendance all the time to make sure that patients don't experience any burns of the skin. That would be a potential risk of this method, but in our practice, we haven't had any patients get skin burns because we're carefully monitoring them during the entire procedure to make sure the skin doesn't get too hot. we are measuring the temperature of the skin all the time and the penetration of the radio frequency waves, so we have a very good idea of what's going on during the treatments.
Who performs the treatment?
The treatment is performed by my medical assistant, who was trained by the company to safely administer Vanquish treatments. Fortunately, it's something that can be done fairly safely, but it is important that the person who does it is well-versed in the technique, because this is one of those procedures that's very operator-dependent. If the technician is not administering the treatments properly, not getting close enough to the skin, not increasing the fat to the proper temperature, then the results are not as good.
So it's not like Cool Sculpting, where there is a device that's actually put on the areas.
That's correct. As you know, with the Cool Sculpt technique, and that's something I considered incorporating into our practice, but I decided I would rather offer Vanquish because I think it's superior in a lot of ways. The Cool Sculpt device actually sucks the skin and subcutaneous fat into a plastic box and freezes the tissue like a cube of butter or an ice cube. And that's a little bit uncomfortable.
Right.
I can say from firsthand experience, I tried it myself. It's not horrific pain, but it's uncomfortable. And Cool Sculpt actually treats only relatively small areas because the applicator, the box that the tissue goes into, is just a few inches long, whereas with the Vanquish device, we have an applicator that covers the entire abdomen and actually even extends over the flank or love handle area. So we can treat a much larger area with each treatment.
So you can treat with Vanquish then the whole abdomen area, and what about the upper back, especially around the bra line?
We can treat that area. Basically, the device is the width of it, or the I guess I should say the length of it is the width of the patient's entire torso, and the height is about 6 inches. So we can treat an area, let's say, that consists of the lower abdomen. Most of our patients are coming in with excessive fat in the lower abdomen, around the belly button area, what we call the periumbilical area, extending laterally to the hips, to the love handle or muffin top. So that can be treated with one series of treatments, but if they want their upper abdomen treated, that would be an additional series of four treatments. And as you mentioned, the back also can be treated, but that would require additional treatments.
Okay, so you're treating then one isolated area, so to speak, at a time.
It's not as isolated as what Cool Sculpt treats. Cool Sculpt treats an area that's just a couple of inches in size. And a lot of the people who use Cool Sculpt have several machines now so that they can put multiple machines on a patient at the same time and cover a larger area. But with Vanquish, it's just done with a single applicator.
And the technician then is there during the whole time?
Correct. She never leaves the room.
Okay, which is different than Cool Sculpting.
Cool Sculpting, the technicians probably can leave the area. But, you know,
most of the time they do.
Yeah. One thing I like about what you've been doing, Michelle, is that you really emphasize safety above all else. And I think that's very important. That's critical. We want to make sure that, you know, these are elective procedures. Patients are coming to doctors to look better. The last thing we want to do is harm them in any way. Therefore, it's critically important that we avoid burns, which we have in 100% of our patients. And that's why our technician really never leaves the area. So it makes it very, very safe.
So that brings me to a subject then about safety and going and have these treatments done at medical spas that may not have the proper supervision, because this is a device and it's easy to, a lot of medical spas have these devices. So how would you consult with patients about this? And because I think there is a safety issue when they're going to medical spas, especially if there's even a question that they could get burned.
Well, that's an excellent point. I think the problem with any modality, as safe as it may be, performed outside the purview of a physician, carries a little bit of a risk, because if there is a complication, plastic surgeons are very well versed in treating skin injuries, whether they're burns or temperature from cold temperatures. It's great to have somebody on site who can help manage any problems that occur. With all of our patients that come in inquiring about Vanquish, I always see the patient first and spend 30 to 45 minutes talking to them about Vanquish, how it works, what the expected results are, and I also like to explain to them what we can achieve with liposuction so patients really understand the full... Yeah, they need to understand the full range of procedures that are available. Most patients who come in for Vanquish decide that that's what they want to try. But some of the patients have to explain to them that liposuction is a bit more predictable and certainly more thorough in terms of how much fat can be removed. You know, many patients decide, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and do that. It's just a matter of giving them their options and then choosing the treatment modality that's best suited to their goals and to their temperament, basically.
So you probably also have some patients sometimes that come in and they opt for lipo and then they perhaps decide that they don't want to do invasive as well.
They do, but it's more, I think it happens more the other way around. Patients come in for non-invasive procedures, and then they decide that they're willing to go ahead. When I explain to them the pros and cons of each, some of them are willing to go ahead and have liposuction. But, you know, many of them, for a variety of reasons, in my practice, one of the common reasons is age. We see a lot of patients that are a little bit older, and they're sometimes in their 70s and even 80s. And, you know, at that point in life, they just, they're not really interested in having an anesthetic and a recovery from a surgical procedure. So they go, you know what, this is what I want to try. And they've been pretty happy with the results. We've seen reductions typically anywhere from about 3 or 4 centimeters up to 6 centimeters or 7 centimeters. So that translates to anywhere from about 1 to 3 inches in reduction in the circumference or the girth of the lower abdomen. So there,
and that could be a lot. I mean, that's significant.
It is a lot. It is significant. We measure every patient at the outset of treatment and then at each of their visits and then 2 months after their final visit, their final session, so that we do try to scientifically document how much reduction there is. Of course, it also helps if patients exercise and diet, as you mentioned earlier. It's all part of a lifestyle program that can really enhance the results, lead to the best possible outcome. So
now,
we
what
encourage
about age?
That.
That's
the nice thing about, yeah, age really isn't an issue with Vanquish. As I mentioned, many of the patients that we treat in my practice are older patients because they're attracted to something that's not very invasive and doesn't involve an anesthetic and doesn't involve any downtime, no discomfort. They can go right back to their normal daily activities as soon as the treatment is over. So that's very appealing to many, particularly older patients. But we have patients all ages, you know, from their 20s to their 80s.
Well, when you're dealing with, though, a older patient that has less skin elasticity, and that's what happens
mm-hmm.
as we age, especially women who've
yes.
had children and
yes.
then they get loose skin. What happens with the Vanquish or any of these non-surgical procedures when it starts to shrink? How does this affect the actual skin, and does the skin become looser and start hanging and they come back for liposuction?
Well, I think that's a great point.
Or tummy tuck.
I'm glad you brought it up. I mean, there are patients, you know, when we assess patients before they undergo any of these procedures, we need to look at a number of factors, and that is the quality of the skin, whether the skin is lax, stretched out, may have stria gravidarum. We have to look at the thickness of the layer of subcutaneous fat, and also the condition of the underlying abdominal muscles and fascia. And all of those components can contribute to protuberance of the tissues. Sometimes patients have relatively little subcutaneous fat, and subcutaneous fat is the only area that liposuction or Vanquish or CoolSculpt affects. So if a patient has a prominent lower abdomen because of stretching of the muscles and the fat that's accumulated is really intra-abdominal, inside the peritoneal cavity, that's not going to be improved by Vanquish. And when we see patients like that, we discourage them from having Vanquish or liposuction. If patients have lax skin, CoolSculpt and Vanquish are not really designed to tighten skin. Now, many times the skin shrinks down when we remove some of the underlying subcutaneous fat. But in older patients, as you mentioned, patients who have a lot of cellulite or irregularities of the skin, dimpling, waviness, laxity, they're still going to have that problem even after successful Vanquish treatments, and those are much better candidates for abdominoplasty or tummy tuck. So tummy tuck's a way to remove excess lax skin and tighten the underlying muscles in conjunction with removal of fat, whereas these non-invasive techniques really just focus on reducing the bulk of subcutaneous fat.
Now, this sounds like that it would be a good technique to have, like, postpartum. If the patient really didn't want to have a tummy tuck, that it could really help right after the birth of a child. Is that correct?
I think those are good. Yes, I think patients who do not have a lot of lax, loose skin, and that would mean, as you pointed out, probably younger patients in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, they're probably better candidates than patients who come in with a hanging flap of skin and fatty tissue, what we call an apron or panniculus. So I think you're right. The postpartum patient who's got a little bit of excessive belly fat is probably a pretty good candidate for these techniques because her skin is likely to contract very well after the treatments.
Now, you raised a really interesting point that when a patient comes in, you really, as a plastic surgeon, you are evaluating their physical state in terms of their abdomen and the fat and where the fat is, which is very different than if a patient goes to a medical spa or even a non-core aesthetic doctor who doesn't have that background and doesn't really understand what's going on there. I mean, I think that's a really good point that you brought up because you're actually examining the patient.
That's correct. If somebody doesn't have all of the modalities at their fingertips, if they're not able to provide whatever procedure the patient would require, they're not likely to offer the correct procedure to patients. So a board-certified plastic surgeon, as you've pointed out in the past, is probably the person who's best prepared to give the patient the full range of modalities that might be applicable in their case, whereas somebody who doesn't perform these other procedures isn't going to be able to offer that to patients and is going to tend to try to push them towards the direction of whatever modality they do offer. But you're absolutely right. We have to evaluate the entire patient and determine what technique is going to give the best result.
And I think that's what's really lacking. And I think that's the area that's really lacking with managing patients' expectations is that if you're thinking that you're going to go to a medical spa, for instance, and go have Vanquish done and you don't even get examined by a plastic surgeon or any doctor that really understands what's going on there with the abdomen and the fat and the umbilical cord and where it is. And I mean, that's important. That's an important part of the whole evaluation.
Well, that's true because anybody can administer Vanquish treatments. Unlike certain things like Botox injections or fillers where it has to be administered by a registered nurse, both Vanquish and I believe CoolSculpt as well, really anybody who's trained to do it, and it's just a very relatively short training course, is legally entitled to do it. It doesn't have to be somebody who's licensed.
So does that mean that I could set up practice in my garage if I bought a machine and had the training?
I'd have to check into that.
I mean, that's scary.
It may need to be done under the supervision of a physician, but many of these procedures that are done in medical spas, the physician is not even on site. He never sees the patient. So it's just in name only. There's a physician nominally overseeing the procedures, but he never sees the patients, doesn't examine them, and he's really not involved in their care. We don't do it that way in our office, and I think a lot of people who use these modalities have the physicians examine the patients, and that's really the way, in my opinion, it should be done.
So in your practice, you don't have CoolSculpting. You exclusively use Vanquish. Is that?
I do. I was considering purchasing CoolSculpting, and as part of my evaluation, I have the procedure done on myself, And, you know, it does work. I have to admit that it does. You know, again, it takes a couple of months to see the final result. There is some reduction in the subcutaneous fat, but it can only treat a very limited area, a relatively small area of the body. So it requires, you know, multiple applications in multiple areas over a prolonged period of time. And it was uncomfortable. So I like to do things for patients that have little, if any, discomfort. And Vanquish is great in that regard. There's just no pain, no discomfort whatsoever. If anything, it's a pleasant
sensation.
So was that
one of the deciding factor more than anything else?
That was part of it. In my opinion, deciding between the two technologies was based on the fact that Vanquish is not uncomfortable, and as I mentioned previously, we can cover a much larger area with each treatment. So I think it's more efficient in terms of removal of fat.
Going back to Vanquish for a minute again, how important is hydration?
Very important.
That it's very important.
It is, because as everyone knows, you know, microwaves actually heat up the water in molecules in whatever they're heating, whether it's your frozen TV dinner or the fat in your tummy. So the better hydrated the patient is, the more efficient the heating is, and the more efficient the killing of fat cells is. So yes, hydration is very important, and we emphasize that for all of our patients.
Is there a preparation that you suggest for patients before they actually have the treatment? How to prepare their body?
Besides drinking, all they have to do really is drink water. We usually recommend patients drink between 6 and 8 glasses of water the day before, the day of, and the day after, and that seems to work pretty well. Beyond that, there's really nothing special patients need to do, and there's no restriction in activities. They can immediately resume whatever their normal activities are when they walk out of the office after the treatment, so they can go back to work or back to the gym or take a walk or go shopping or do whatever they like. No restrictions, no downtime.
How familiar are you with UltraShape?
I'm not too familiar with it. Is that a what kind of technology does that use? Is that microwaves or?
It's radio frequency too.
It's probably,
I know that's
similar,
a newer.
But I'm not. Well, you know what?
I know that's a newer.
There are other technologies like Exelos, which is basically the same modality as Vanquish. It's the same company manufactures it, but it's designed to treat other parts of the body, like basically the lower extremities, the thighs, maybe the arms. So we don't have that technology in our practice, but that's another application of radio frequency waves for fat reduction is Exelos. The one that you mentioned, I'm not familiar with.
It's UltraShape. Yeah, it uses ultrasound, so it's ultrasound energy.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's different. That's different than radio frequency.
Right.
I don't know
right.
how effective that is. I can't comment on it. I have no experience with it.
What's the cost of? Go ahead. You can finish what you're saying.
I was going to say that the two things that I do have personal experience with are CoolSculpt, or freeze the fat, and Vanquish, or melt away the fat. And I really am not in a position to comment about ultrasonic treatments or other modalities, because I really haven't used them and don't know much about them. We charge patients $600 per treatment, but if they purchase a package of 4 treatments, we sell it for just under $2,000, so it's $1,995.
Okay.
For the 4 treatments. Often if patients want to extend and have additional treatments, we give them a further reduction in the cost of each treatment.
So once
we have
patients
a built-in
have
economy
it,
of scale. Yep, go ahead.
Economy of scale. Do they need touch-ups?
Well, what's happened is we've had a number of patients. The reason I mentioned that we sometimes do additional treatments at a lower cost is we have patients who will have the 4 treatments, and they see some results, and they go, you know what, I'm happy with this, but I want to do more, can you give me a discount? And we do. We're happy to do that. I mean, if a patient is loyal and is having repeated treatments, we will often significantly reduce the cost of treatments after the first 4 sessions. So I don't know if you want to consider that a touch-up or just additional treatments to try to further reduce the fatty tissue in an area. Or some of our patients will do the abdomen and say, well, now I'd like to do my back. And so, of course, for those additional treatments, we'll often give them a discount in the fee.
And what else can you use Vanquish for as an adjunct to what other treatments? Like if a patient comes in for other treatments, how can you use Vanquish to supplement it?
I think that we can use Vanquish to supplement. You know, if patients have abdominoplasties, tummy tucks, when we do a tummy tuck, we can't be too aggressive about thinning out the tissues. We can't really remove fat from the abdominal area aggressively because it greatly increases the risk of complications. Some of them are serious complications. So we're very conservative combining liposuction with a tummy tuck. So there might be instances where a patient has a tummy tuck or an abdominoplasty, same thing, and still has some excessive bulk or thickness of the tissues of the lower abdomen. Those might be good candidates for adjunctive treatment with Vanquish, because we could then reduce the bulk of the area after tightening the skin and muscles with the tummy tuck. So I can see that as an adjunctive area. Yeah, that might work out well. Or even.
And how does the cost balance out?
Well,
the liposuction, Vanquish.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that is one of the important elements, because liposuction is more expensive because it typically is done in an outpatient surgery center and is usually done under anesthesia. So there's the fees associated with the use of the surgery center and the professional fees for the anesthesiologist. So I would say that liposuction typically costs in the range of $4,000 to $5,000 to maybe $8,000 or $9,000, depending on how many areas are done, whereas I mentioned the Vanquish treatments are one series of treatments is less than $2,000. So clearly there's some savings in money, but once again, you know, the old saying, you get what you pay for. Liposuction is, you know, it's a more efficient way. It's a more reliable way to remove fat. The results are immediately apparent. I mean, at the first postoperative visit, when we take off the dressings, patients are often pleasantly surprised by the dramatic change in their contours, because the technology for liposuction is very good. It works extremely well. Tummy tucks or abdominoplasties, you know, operations to tighten the underlying abdominal muscles and to remove the lax, excessive skin of the abdomen, those always require general anesthesia. They're always done in a surgery center, and the cost for those procedures can run from $8,000 to $9,000, upwards, depending on the size of the patient and how long the procedure takes. So there is a cost differential, and that's a factor for many patients. We understand that. We appreciate that.
What type of liposuction do you perform?
Well, I have investigated all the different types. As you know, there's traditional liposuction, and then there's the power-assisted liposuction, what we call the PAL system, which is the one I use. There's also ultrasonic liposuction and laser-assisted liposuction. The studies that I've read and from my own experience, I think that there's nothing that's more efficient than power-assisted liposuction, so that's the technology that I prefer. Ultrasonic liposuction requires larger incisions for the portal to insert the cannula, so I think that's a negative. There's a risk of burning the skin with the laser-assisted liposuction, so I think that the safest and most effective, most efficient modality for removing fat is the microair PAL, power-assisted liposuction technique. We do that in conjunction with what's called the tumescent technique, where we infiltrate the tissues with a relatively large volume of dilute local anesthetic before we do the liposuction, and this increases the efficiency of fat removal and greatly reduces the amount of blood loss. So it makes the procedure very clean, very efficient, and we get consistently good results with a very low risk of complications. You know, I know that you're very oriented towards, and this is important, and I commend you on it, oriented towards making sure patients understand that these procedures carry risks, and they want to do everything they can to minimize the risk of complications and try to ensure the best possible outcome. And that's one of the nice things about liposuction is it's got a very high index of safety. Patient satisfaction rate is extremely high. We get good results in probably 95 to 98% of the patients. Maybe even more, I just don't want to overstate it. And the risk of complications with liposuction is extremely low when it's done by an experienced
operator. Yes, as long
operator,
right, exactly. As long as it's done by an experienced, right. And that,
well,
that's
right.
The key word, experience,
yeah,
and trained and skilled.
Absolutely. Yep. Because the
and not a hairdresser
problems,
who's doing liposuction in the back of a hair salon and then the person dies. I think that happened in L.A. Did you read that?
How did their hair turn out?
This happened, maybe it was last year or the year before. It was some person was doing liposuction in the back of a hair salon somewhere in LA.
We hear about all kinds of strange situations where people inject various mystery chemicals into patient subcutaneous fats to try to dissolve the tissues. That I certainly wouldn't recommend. And of course, non-trained operators doing any of these procedures is a no-no. But in skilled hands, the risk of complications is extremely low. I know a lot of people have heard horror stories about liposuction and are actually have an irrational fear of it because it's an extremely safe procedure when it's done properly. The commonest complications come from the operator being too aggressive, trying to remove too much fat, getting too close to the undersurface of the skin, the dermal layer, and causing irregularities or creases, waviness, dimpling, and irregularities of the overlying skin. That's a problem that I sometimes see in patients who have had injudicious liposuction performed elsewhere, and we do what we can to try to correct that with things like fat grafting, but that's the commonest serious complication that I've seen. But it can be avoided. It can be avoided by proper technique.
I just read a little story. I think it was posted in, somewhere in the UK, in one of the magazines in the UK. Mm-hmm. It was online, mm-hmm. And it was about this woman who had lunchtime lipo. That was the story. She had lunchtime lipo. She wasn't going to tell her husband, and she just decided to go and have it, and then went back to work. And it was laser lipo, and
mm-hmm.
she made it sound
yep.
like it wasn't any big deal at all that she could go back right away afterwards, and she hid it from her family. I mean, it was a cute little article the way she wrote it, but I was thinking, wow, I don't think I would want to have even laser lipo and then go right back to work and
to
do this lunchtime lipo.
I don't think that's really realistic. No.
Right.
I mean, whether it's laser-assisted liposuction, ultrasonic, or the power-assisted liposuction modality that we use, there is some swelling, there is some bruising, there is some discomfort. Patients need to wear a compression garment over the area that was treated for several weeks after the procedure. So I think it's a bit of an exaggeration to say I had it done at lunchtime and went back to my office. I'm not sure I really believe that. Now, maybe if the operator, the surgeon, or whoever was treating the patient hardly did anything, then maybe they could go back to work. But in my experience, that's not the way it works. Now, most patients can resume most of their normal daily activities within a day or two after the procedure, but they have to avoid vigorous physical activities like, aerobics or Pilates or playing golf or tennis would be out for at least 3 or 4 weeks after liposuction. The beauty of Vanquish is the patient can walk out of the office and go to the tennis court if they want, or go to the
There
gym.
You go. There's the lunchtime.
That's
there's
the lunchtime
thing, fat reduction, right?
Exactly. Right. That's right.
We don't want any of our listeners going and thinking they could have liposuction and then just go back to work. And that's totally unrealistic. Right.
I agree
right.
with you. That's for the most part unrealistic. But going back to work after Vanquish treatments is quite feasible. And most of our patients, they just walk out of the office and go back to whatever they were doing. So that is true with Vanquish, and probably with CoolSculpt as well. No real downtime. At least not too much downtime.
Where do you see this whole industry with the devices, the skin tightening, the fat reduction devices, where do you see that going over the
that's a great
couple
question.
Years?
It's a really great question because, over the last, let's say, 5 to 10 years, there's been an enormous number of new technologies introduced, whether they're radio frequency based or ultrasonic waves or laser techniques to try to reduce areas of unwanted fat to try to tighten skin. And I think that, you know, as we use these different modalities, some are going to prove to be effective, others are going to fall by the wayside. I mean, that's kind of the history of new technology in medicine from the beginning. So I think we're in that period of time where things are really kind of sorting out now, and we're just going to have to see over time which of these technologies proves most effective and most cost-effective and most user-friendly and gets the best results. I'm confident that Vanquish will have a role. You know, there may be improvements in the technology so that the treatments are more efficient, but we'll see. And maybe other technologies will be introduced in the future that are even better. Let's hope so.
Vanquish has been around for a couple of years, hasn't it?
Several years, yeah. I don't know the history in detail, but it was developed, I believe, in the Czech Republic. And it's not brand new. It's been around. The other thing is that radio frequency waves, because some patients have a concern about any kind of radiation, if you want to call it that. Radio frequency waves have been used for decades for various medical applications. We know that they're completely safe. There's no side effects. Patients don't get cancer. They don't get any kind of problem from radio frequency treatments. So we know that the technique, the modality is safe to use in patients. And that, of course, as you've emphasized, is our primary concern. Patient safety is the main
safety.
Concern.
Yeah. Number one.
And I'm
number
confident
one.
That Vanquish is extremely safe. I think that the CoolSculpt is also probably very safe. I doubt that there's much risk, if any, of any kind of permanent injury from it. That's a good thing about these technologies.
Yeah, and we live in an exciting time. I mean, there's all these new developments and new FDA approvals coming down the pipe, and so yeah, it's a great exciting time for aesthetic medicine.
It is, and you're right about the fact that in the last 10 years, there's been a huge shift in terms of the growth of non-invasive procedures, whether they're laser or things like Vanquish or CoolSculpt or Botox or fillers. These things weren't around when I did my original training in plastic surgery. They're all relatively new products and new technologies that have made a huge difference in our specialty and offer solutions for patients who don't want to have major surgical procedures for whatever reason. So it's great to have these options. We can really tailor the treatment to what the patient is most comfortable with. So that's a great thing about these adjunctive measures that we have available to us now.
Yes, and there's been a big emphasis on body shaping lately.
There has.
On having a small waist, nice hips, a big butt.
Actually, we should touch briefly upon that, because the flip side of the coin of liposuction is fat grafting. What we do now, instead of throwing the fat out, sometimes we can actually graft it into areas where patients would like to have more fullness. And as you pointed out, that's usually in the area of the buttocks. And the techniques
right.
for fat grafting, it's dependent on how it's done. But if the procedure is done properly by an experienced surgeon, the results are very good. I've been very happy with the what we call the Brazilian butt lift. That is a buttock enhancement using the patient's own fat. For many years, the only way that patients could have buttock enlargement was with the insertion of silicone implants. That's a procedure that was fraught with a high rate of complications, because putting a large foreign body into an area where you're going to be sitting on it, and it's in an area where there's potentially contamination from bacteria, there can be infections, there can be skin breakdown. There was a lot of negatives about silicone implants for gluteal enlargement, but fat transfer is the patient's own natural tissues. Once the fat has been injected and the grafts have taken, it's just like normal fat. And it's a very safe procedure and works quite well. So that's kind of the flip side of taking fat out, is putting it back in.
So are you seeing a lot of patients for the Brazilian butt lift?
I am. Certainly now that people are beginning to learn about the Brazilian butt lift and the efficiency of fat grafting, we're seeing a lot of patients for that. We're also beginning to do fat grafting for breast enhancement. That was something that was frowned upon some years ago.
I want to talk about that for a few minutes.
Yeah, that's
we haven't got 10 minutes left.
All right, well, that's good, because it's an interesting subject and one
very
that I'm interested
interesting.
In. Yeah, 30 years ago, when the idea of doing fat grafting for breast augmentation was first introduced, it was severely criticized by the establishment, by board-certified plastic surgeons and by our organizations. And the claims were that it would create areas of scarring and lumps in the breast and make it difficult to detect breast cancer on mammography or physical examination. That's now pretty much been disproven. And it turns out that when the fat grafting is done using the proper technique, that we can get pretty good results with very little risk of creating areas of fat necrosis or scarring of the breast. We know now that radiologists can read the mammograms on patients who've had fat transfer to their breasts. It doesn't interfere with the diagnosis of breast cancers. So now it's become an accepted procedure, and of course it's a nice alternative to the use of silicone breast implants. The disadvantages of fat grafting are that there is some limitation in how much enlargement of the breast can be accomplished. I would say that the typical breast augmentation patient that we see now has implants in the range of between 250 and 350 cc's. When we do fat grafting, you know, sometimes we're only going to be able to get 100 grams or so of enlargement of each breast, and it may take, you know, two or even three sessions of fat grafting to achieve the result that the patient wants. Fat grafting of the breast is also, you know, a little bit unpredictable. Even if everything is done perfectly, there's no guarantee as to how much of the fat is actually going to survive. So there's a range in terms of how much fat survives. Anywhere from 20 to 80% of the grafted fat can survive. So there's some variation or some variability in how successful the outcome is going to be. But from the safety standpoint, I don't think there's any problem with fat grafting for breast augmentation. It's a great new innovation.
So you're taking the fat out of a different area like you would if you were doing a Brazilian butt lift, and you're injecting it into the breast tissue. Approximately, I know you can't really tell me exactly, but so approximately how many needles or times are you going into one breast?
Many times,
fat?
Hundreds. Yeah,
hundreds.
The way that we do fat grafting, it's kind of the whole principle is based on injecting what we call small aliquots, or small little volumes of fat, diffusely throughout the recipient site. So what we want to really do is create a honeycomb-like structure of injected fat. So that does call for multiple needle sticks, but there's no incisions. These are just, you know, tiny little incisions in the skin,
right,
puncture wounds. And then we thread the fat in multiple planes, in multiple directions, into the breast tissue, into the subcutaneous tissues, even into the underlying muscles beneath the breast to try to bulk up all of these areas. And that's really how it works. So there are multiple sticks, but patients generally have this procedure done under general anesthesia. They're completely asleep, so they don't really feel any discomfort from the multiple sticks. So that's the way it's
done.
So
if a patient is flat, if a patient doesn't have a lot of volume on top,
yes,
but has volume underneath, will the fat, if you put fat grafting on the top, will that help lift the whole breast area?
It will do that. I mean, fat grafting or breast implants help to lift the breast because,
right,
you sort of think of the breast like a tire. When it loses volume, if your tire loses air, it loses its shape. If you reinflate it, fill it back up, it becomes round and full again and resumes the shape, the desirable shape. Same with the breast. With pregnancy, with breastfeeding, with aging sometimes, with weight fluctuations, there can be loss of volume, loss of projection, less cleavage, upper pole concavity of the breast. All of these things are addressed by either breast implants or fat grafting. You know, the principle's pretty simple. Fill up the deflated bag and get a better shape. So, you know, the areas that we can, I mean, the great thing about fat grafting is instead of just discarding the fat that we harvest from the thighs, the butt, the thighs or the abdomen or the bra roll area, we can now inject it into the buttocks, the breasts, or the face. Those are probably the three most common areas where fat grafting has proven to be useful. It's very good in the facial area for cheek enhancement and for filling out some of the atrophied areas that often occur with aging. So it's
and now we have
Voluma. Fat grafting's been a great advance. Yeah, but you know what? With the problem with the with Voluma and these other injectables is that we're talking about very small volumes. So for something like the tear troughs around the eyes or the nasolabial folds, yes, Voluma or Radius or Juvederm can be useful because we're only talking about the need to inject a few cc's, a few grams of material. But when we're talking about buttock enhancement,
breast augmentation,
we're talking about hundreds of cc's. So I don't know what the exact cost of Voluma is, but I can guarantee
no,
you.
No, I wasn't referring to
cc's,
Voluma
yeah.
in the breast.
Yeah, not in the breast.
No, I wasn't referring, yeah. That's really off-label now, isn't it?
it probably would be, but it would be also off most people's budgets. I mean,
right, it would be very expensive.
It would be in the tens of thousands of dollars,
hundreds
of thousands.
That,
so,
that would be crazy.
Most people would go for that.
No, I don't think so.
No,
are you doing a lot of fat grafting in the breast?
Fat grafting in the breast? Yes, a modest amount. You know, often in my practice, because I do a lot of secondary procedures, corrective breast surgery, for example, patients sometimes develop waviness or rippling of their breasts, patients who've had breast implants because of the thinning of the tissues. Fat grafting has been extremely effective in improving those patients. It's also very useful in conjunction with breast reconstruction in post-mastectomy patients. They may have the initial reconstruction with an implant or with an expander and an implant, and then later on there's some areas that require further enhancement, and fat grafting can be very good for that, for smoothing out contours, for filling in depressed areas, for giving a nicer shape to the reconstructed breast. So it's useful both for correction of problems following cosmetic breast surgery, for improvement in the results after breast reconstruction in mastectomy patients, and now for primary breast augmentation. So fat grafting is a great advance in what we have to offer patients. Very enthusiastic about it.
What's the cost of fat grafting for breast augmentation?
That is one of the issues. The cost would be similar to the cost for a breast augmentation. So probably we're talking in the neighborhood of $7,000 or $8,000. But because a patient may not achieve the amount of augmentation that she wants after just one session, it could end up being a lot more expensive than breast implants. So I think that's one of the things that has sort of been a drag on using fat grafting alone for breast augmentation, because you just really can't achieve sometimes the volume that the patient wants. It may require multiple procedures, and it can end up being much more costly than a surgery for breast implant insertion. So that's a good point. But there are some patients who want just a very modest breast augmentation. You know, our typical patient is looking to increase her breast size by at least 250, 300 grams. But occasionally patients will come in who say they want, you know, that they sort of prefer the European aesthetic as opposed to the American breast aesthetic. And they go, I want a very modest increase in my breast size, maybe just a half a cup size. You know, patients like that are great candidates for fat transfer because we can achieve modest breast enlargement using that technique.
And that's exactly what I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you what the trend is, what you're seeing down in SoCal. Are you seeing women coming in with less wanting more natural, a little bit less, or are they still coming in wanting the big boobs?
I wish I could say they're coming in wanting less because, you know, that old saying, less is more. But most of our patients feel that more is more. And I guess
more
is more, not less is more. You know, I've been doing this for a long time. As you mentioned, I've been in practice for about 37 years now. And I remember that when I was in my original plastic surgery training back in the early 1970s, the typical breast implant size that we were inserting was in the neighborhood of 150 to 180 cc's.
Wow.
We never use that size anymore. That's so small. I mean, we occasionally use it in little tiny Asian patients, some Vietnamese patients who are very petite, some Japanese patients that are very petite, that we do use smaller implants. But the over time, over the past 30 to 40 years, there's been a gradual inflation, if you will, in the size of breast implants used for primary breast augmentation. So while the average size, let's say, in the 1970s was maybe 180 cc's, now it's probably 300 or 350 cc's. And there are many patients who want to go larger than that. So in answer to your question, the trend seems to be more in the direction of bigger and bigger, not smaller and smaller. But we do see the occasional patient that wants to have a very conservative augmentation. And, you know, we're happy to accommodate whatever the patient's wishes are as long as it can be done safely. This is an important point, and that is that we can't just arbitrarily put large implants in patients who don't have the anatomy that's going to allow the soft tissue envelope to expand over the implant. So if patients have a very tight breast, tight skin, they've never been pregnant, they've never really had any breast tissue, they're not really candidates for large implants. We have to be conservative in those patients. Safety first.
Well, also, some patients don't look, you know, they may be short or small, and if they had very large breasts, proportionally, they're not going to look great in clothes.
I agree, but,
you know,
the customer is always right.
You see women that have huge, they have huge breasts, and they're little, and they're really not fat, or I don't want to use the word fat, but they're really not heavy, and yet
You're exactly right, and I tell this to patients all the
time.
Because
they're top
heavy. Want to have large implants. I say, you know, this is going to make you look heavier. So
yeah.
That often gets their attention. But we try to do things that meet the patient's expectations, but we want to do it in a safe way. I can tell you that a big part of my practice is correcting problems related to breast implant surgery that's gone awry. In fact, I just co-edited with Dr. Jack Fisher a textbook called Problems in Breast Surgery, a Repair Manual. It's a book that's actually designed for plastic surgeons. But in that book, we present a number of different conditions that can occur, adverse outcomes, suboptimal outcomes after breast surgery, and how to correct the problems. And one of the commonest reasons that patients have problems after breast implant surgery is that they've just had excessively large implants. You know, it's a matter of common sense. Large implants cause thinning of the tissues, atrophy, stretching, sagging of the breast. In some patients, excessively large implants can even lead to thinning of the tissues with ulceration and exposure of the implant, a very serious complication. So while it may be desirable for some patients to have excessively large breasts, we have to be careful about doing this because there are definite risks associated with going too large. And again, Go ahead.
I was just going to ask you what your opinion is about breast augmentation in the later years of your life. Do you ever have patients that come in that they're in their 70s and they want breast
augmentation? Well, that's a great question because just 2 weeks ago I did the oldest patient that I've done a breast augmentation on. She was 84. And,
oh, wow, that's great.
It is great because she has a fabulous result and she's very happy. The only question is, why did you wait so long? So
yeah,
she's actually.
Wow, why did she wait so long?
I'm not sure, but she's a patient who was having a facelift and asked,
okay,
you know, can I get my breasts enlarged at the same time? And there was no reason not to do it. Age is not a contraindication. If a patient's in good health, as she was, there's no reason that they can't have breast augmentation at any age. But most commonly, it's women in their late 20s and early 30s. But
right.
We see patients in their 40s, 50s, and as I mentioned, even beyond, who can successfully have breast augmentation.
She must have been so thrilled.
She is. She looks great.
She must be ecstatic having the body that she wants.
Yeah.
Wow. That's so great.
Yeah, she's got a
face
that's breast master. Yeah.
She's probably
I'm always
dating.
Happy to do older patients. No, she's got a very supportive husband. She's married and he's going to come to see me about the opposite problem. He's got gynecomastia. Men, as you know, sometimes develop fatty breast tissue, especially as they get older. So I'm going to be seeing him next week about doing liposuction to correct his gynecomastia. So
I think
make one smaller and one bigger.
I think that's great at in her 80s that she wants to do this and she did it. I think
that's a great story.
Yeah, that's a great story.
Yeah. She's by far the oldest that I've done.
I think that's great. Well, we've run out of time. And
okay, but we haven't run out of topics, have we?
Run out of topics.
Oh, that's the
and
beauty
listeners
of it.
Can reach you at your website is www.drhandel.com.
Yeah, all they have to do is search for drhandel.com. It's easy to find.
Right, and you are on some social media as well.
I am, and we also have a phone number, so we're not hard to find.
Okay, and your phone number is?
The phone number is 805-682-9100. That's 805-682-9100. So we're happy to see patients, try to help them make good decisions about achieving their aesthetic goals. And I want to thank
and
you
safely.
For yes, I want to thank you for really emphasizing the importance of board certification of surgeons, and that patients make sure that the procedures are being done safely by experienced surgeons. That's so important. So thank you for emphasizing that.
Well,
I commend
you
on that.
So
you're doing a good
thank
public
you.
Service.
Oh, thank you
all
so
right.
much.
Michelle, it's been a pleasure.
I appreciate
thank you so
that.
Much
well,
for your
enjoy
time.
Enjoy the Oscars on Sunday.
I will.
I'm sure a lot of surgeons will have a lot of gossip about who had what done.
You bet.
Right?
They will. Absolutely.
Right? And thank you for listening, and please follow me on Twitter, Facebook, or Pinterest at NipTuckCoach. You can also email me at info@NipTuckCoach. And remember, you only have one face and one body, so please choose wisely. And we'll see you next week. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye. Thank you again, Dr. Handel.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the NipTuck Coach Radio. Join us next week for another exciting program about the world of cosmetic surgery and beauty. To learn more about Michelle Garber, go to www.niptuckcoach.com. To consult with Michelle directly, call 415-494-7211.